Welcome back. Thank you for being here. This is Red Ice Radio. I'm Henrik Palmgren from Sweden. RedIceCreations.com and RedIceMembers.com is our websites. We do interviews and programs with a lot of different authors, filmmakers, and political thinkers in many different fields and across a lot of different subjects. Today we are talking with Gordon Duff, editor of Veterans Today, for a varied discussion on everything from the politics in America and socialism to his love for Obama. I had a few topics outlined for this interview, and I had a desire to discuss Gaza, Zionism, Israel, and the latter two we did actually bring up here and there briefly, but the program took a very different turn than planned, and I did indeed learn a lot of new things about Veterans Today and Gordon Duff's political stance and his admiration for Obama, which I had not expected. We'll begin this Gordian knot of an interview by discussing the recent Malaysian airline crash slash takedown over the Ukraine. We also ended up extending the two parts into one. So if you're a Gordon fan, or if you're not, I think you'll find the following very revealing. Welcome to the program, Gordon Duff. It's great to talk to you. Thank you for coming on. I hope you're doing well today.
Well, it's been a busy 24 hours for the world, an unpleasant 24 hours. If you're in the news business and news, I don't know whether to call it a business. Being quite honest, I'll call news a racket. If you're in the news racket, distorting facts, lying to the public, manipulating people pays extremely well. And an awful lot of people have signed themselves up. And it's times like these that have made so many of them millionaires.
Well, there's just so much going on pertaining to it. We have so much to discuss. You know, I definitely want to talk more about Gaza later, the Israeli situation. Basically, just in terms of U.S. foreign policy alone and what's happening right now on the geopolitical chessboard. But let's begin to discuss the ominous MH17, the Boeing 777 that was shot down over Ukraine recently. What has happened here? Let's just go over the chain of events, Gordon, and I want to get your analysis of the situation here.
Go ahead. Are you taking the lead on this then?
Well, I wanted to ask you in terms of what do you think that this is all about? If we kind of just look at the big picture here, I saw a couple of articles about this over on veteranstoday.com pertaining to what some of the possibilities might be as we see the different kind of nations trying to blame basically Russia flat out for this. What do you think is going on here? What's the deeper analysis?
Well, as soon as the plane had hit, you know, we have a news bureau in Donetsk, and we had people at the scene in the wreckage within 45 minutes. Now, we have a news bureau operating out of Tbilisi that is strongly connected through the region, and we'll have Jeffrey Silverman. If you were to go to Veterans Today, you'll see his report. And we looked at the air defense systems, and this is starting the wrong way in, of course, because you have to blame someone. And I'll be doing that. But the blame typically has fallen on a BUK, B-U-K, battlefield defense system, that either was Russian firing from across the border, that was stolen by the Novo-Russian separatists, who then had brought in, they would have had to, and we've verified this, to operate that, which is a five-vehicle network that is used to operate the BUK at command. They have an air conditioning electrical system. It's quite a little parade to send a missile up. They would have needed at least 17 highly trained technicians to do this. We have no evidence of them having that. There were several batteries that the Russians picked up on their radar. They claim that the Ukrainian junta out of Kiev, I will not call it a government. I think that's a bit of a stretch at this point, that they had turned on radio. Now, I'd like to be able to take the Russian story. It's very attractive and it fits into our politics well, but the BUK system is a battlefield defense system with a maximum altitude of 40,000 feet. This plane was flying at 33,000 feet. That 40,000 feet works, you know how these things work like this. If you're directly overhead, it's 40,000 feet. If you're 20 miles away, it's 25,000 feet. A BUK system probably couldn't do it. Certainly no shoulder-fired system. It's not a reasonable claim by any means based on this information, basically. And this is, if it were a buck system, the Russians couldn't have done it because the plane was never close enough to Russia based on the trajectories to be within range of that system. It couldn't have been done, probably couldn't have been done by the Nova Russian because they didn't have the personnel and there's no evidence they have one of these systems. No one's misplaced one unless you lost one going to the store today. I checked my garage. Mine's still out there. So it wasn't mine either. The next shot would be to claim that Ukraine did that. Toward that end, we have information that, and this is where we begin coming up with what resembles hard proof and a conspiracy, and we're obviously dealing with a conspiracy.
Yeah.
Air traffic controllers from Kiev had routed this aircraft 200 miles from where it should have been, directly over something that brought it down. It didn't belong there. They made the plane turn. We know that. We're in contact with one of the air traffic controllers. Said the military was in there. The military had routed the plane. The military had removed all non-Ukrainian nationals from air traffic control. And by the way, in Ukraine, that's most of them. And in order to be air traffic control, you have to speak perfect English anywhere in the world. I don't know if you're aware of that.
No, we I call didn't.
It's the Chuck Yeager syndrome, if you know who Chuck Yeager is.
No, actually, I don't. Who's that?
Chuck Yeager was the first pilot to break the sound barrier. Shot down five German jets, or German planes, not jets, in one day in World War II. America's greatest test pilot, supposedly the greatest pilot that ever lived. There's a movie about him called The Right Stuff. Chuck was a boy from West Virginia. And almost all American pilots, when they're talking on a microphone, take on that very specialized West Virginia drawl that Yeager used. So it's, you know, hey, folks out there, this is your pilot. We have a minor problem. Our left wing has been shot off. We've got flames in the cockpit. We'll be dealing with this and getting back to you. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your look.
Yeah, exactly.
And the airline industry and the pilot associations have been infected with that. And it's a little inside airline humor, as it were. But we know going back, the plane was rerouted. And then there's the broader picture where you started, cui bono, who benefits? With everything, who benefits? Now, we have one other story which we will never be able to verify ever, that President Putin's plane intersected the path of this plane, and that his plane has the same colors, the same basic signature. And Russia Today published this, although there were simultaneous denials from other places in Russia. And this came out of TASS news agency. Now, if this were an attempt to assassinate Putin, and if one were to follow his enemies, that Putin believes he has a fifth column in Moscow.
Yeah.
And am I allowed to call them Zionists?
Oh, of course. Are you kidding?
Yeah. Well, that's who he believes them to be.
Yes.
And if they were responsible for this, nothing else will be heard. We will get no confirmations, no news stories. It will darken up. At some point, as Sun Tzu would say, the bodies of Mr. Putin's enemies will come floating by.
Well, he's dodged other bullets before Putin. I mean, car bombs going off and everything. And he survived quite a few of these attempts, I believe. Again, if this is one of them, I don't know. But it is interesting that this has happened in the past, for sure.
Well, and we're not going to know. Now, here's the wild card in this. In 2010, the Israeli Air Force was training with the Turks. The Turks had allowed the Israelis to train in southern Turkey. Specifically, this is the rationale they give, because they had drone deals and other deals with Israeli defense services. And by the way, and I work closely with Israeli defense services as well, and have long had partnerships with them. You can't do anything in electronics, communications, without dealing with Israeli companies. And
right.
Before criticizing them, and I'm always, and since I work with them, like this, Gordon, why are you so mean to us? Could it be because you're so bad? I mean, other than that, why?
Right. Well, exactly. Yeah. Hmm.
Well, in 2010, the Israelis, and there's an old joke here about a construction site. There's a guard at a construction site, and the same guy every day takes an empty wheelbarrow out. And the guard stops and looks, and there's nothing in the wheelbarrow. And so week after week, at the end of every shift, he takes a wheelbarrow, but the guard knows he's stealing something. What the guard didn't figure out is that the guy's stealing wheelbarrows. As we make that relevant, for a number of training missions between Turkey and Israel, Israel would bring typically 8 fighter bombers into Turkey and train. Now, what Turkey wasn't paying attention to is that the Israelis would only take 6 of them back. The other 2 flew off to Azerbaijan. Azerbaijan had developed, we call this a cover and deception plan. There are 2 old Soviet airfields, fighter airfields in Azerbaijan, that the government claimed as cover, that were being held by Armenian separatists. The Israelis began storing planes there, as many as 6 that I know of, perhaps a few more. Drones. We have a verification on this. I don't know if you remember the story from 2 years ago, but 2 Armenian officers defected to Iran and broke the story that the Israelis had opened an airbase in Azerbaijan.
Huh.
The Azerbaijani government officially apologized, but we have no evidence to close the base. The Azerbaijanis are particularly sensitive to their delightful Iranian neighbors, mostly because the Baku-Ceyhan pipeline actually comes within 6 miles of the Iranian border, and that's, of course, their entire economy. And Iran does keep an armored division on the border. I mean, it's a minor thing,
right?
You know, but it's a friendly reminder that, you know, that good relations between neighbors are sometimes based on shared respect.
Yeah.
In June of 2010, an American ship called the USS Grapple, and it was escorted by Israeli patrol boats, pulled into the Georgian port of Poti. And there are a variety of ways to pronounce that. That's the one I'm going to choose to run with. It was loaded with JDAM bunker busters, runway denial munitions, things you would use for attacking nuclear containment, typically. But for for suppressing other defenses. This entire shipload of munitions was transported to these airfields where it sits to this day. Now, how this applies. At the beginning here of this debacle in the last 24 hours, we have evidence that a single American-built F-15E with AN-70 advanced radar left this airfield. That's an American twin engine, and it's a twin cockpit. It's a modification of the standard F-15 Eagle. This is a very large fighter bomber. Left heading toward this direction. Now, this is a plane capable of shooting down an airliner at much further range than any of the air defenses in the region. Also, it's capable of acting as an AWAC. It has a very advanced radar that can see up and down as far as 20,000 feet and with a range of over 500 miles. If you were involved in a project there, this would have been the plane you used. We know one was there. Can I say it was used? Can I say it fired a missile? No, I can't. But it's a capability.
Right.
And there's, you know, we have means, motive, and opportunity. We don't have, which is, you know, the circumstantial evidence you can send most Americans to jail for life. Did they do it? Not a clue. The other issue we have potentially is that if this were a ground missile system that had shot down the plane, nothing smaller than an S-300 could have done it. Both Russia and the Ukraine have those systems. However, the United States operates a number of satellites over the area, and I'm a contractee operator on 4 high-resolution military satellites there myself through our aerospace branch in London. So I have, which, you know, I was not targeting the Ukraine at the time.
Right.
The images are about $6,000 a piece, but the U.S. definitely is watching the border, watching the region, and with the passovers that we have as far as satellite, and these are at multiple resolutions out 200 miles and then specific areas, because these have multiple cameras using hyperspectral sensors, low light optical, and synthetic aperture radar, it would have been impossible not to have picked up a ground missile being fired. Additionally, over the entire area that had constituted the Soviet Union, the American air defense system is part of the VELA system. We'll see any missile firing of any kind. And for an air defense missile the size of a Buk or an S-300, those would have been picked up exactly. And if you wonder how those systems work, because this is kind of what I do for a living.
Right.
As soon as a missile like this is fired at the satellite downlink station, this an algorithm that detects a launch of any kind, even a cruise missile, will tick, or even a fighter going to afterburner, or thermal sensors will pick up ships, lighting boilers, any of this is picked up. That's an algorithm, or the movement of armor that picked up synthetic aperture radar. If armor were in Russia, let's say 50 miles from the border, that wouldn't trigger a signal. But if it formed a column and moved toward the Ukrainian border, that would. And it's a very simple program to write. And those things, within 5 minutes, land on the desk of the Secretary of Defense.
Right.
No one can claim 10 days on that. They come out immediately. And of course, if it goes there, they have it in Israel, they've got it at NATO, they've got it everywhere. And so there's no way for these things to happen where minimally the governments don't know. And it's the Russians, however, this morning that admitted that they were watching the area with their satellites, and they're claiming the launch of a Buk. And we're not confirming that.
Right.
And I will relinquish this to you, and you can figure what I said or didn't say there.
Well, there's a number of things of, again, as usual with these things, that kind of break from the standard procedures, it seems like. One of them, of course, is the flight path. One was actually, and read another source online here, that were actually tracking the flight paths with something called FlightWare, and they showed the deviant path, if you will, of this particular flight on the 17th. So the question is, who has the capability of doing that, or why was it directed, etc. That's things we do not have access to yet.
Only Kiev. There was also a report that the plane was being shadowed by 2 Ukrainian fighters that dropped away 3 minutes before the plane went down.
Mm-hmm.
We have a confirmation on that as to what that had to do with it. I'm saying there's a good chance that this was taken down by an air-to-air missile. Anything else,
An air-to-air missile is much less likely to show up on satellite surveillance than anything else. And it's pretty much impossible to move one of these ground systems in because they have, you know, they have an encumbered radar system and service vehicles without somebody noticing. You've got human intelligence on the ground. Everybody's got a camera phone. Everybody can drop something onto YouTube in a minute.
Yeah.
And, you know, except that the Americans in over a decade in Afghanistan, no one has ever seen something leave a poppy field and move out of the country or move to a heroin processing plant in 10 years. I find that quite amazing, but that's just a minor aside here.
Now, is there any connection in your view at all with the MH370? What is that now? A couple of months ago, 3 months ago? Is it more? Time moves so fast. But nonetheless, we're talking about the same Malaysian Airlines. Both were 777, for example. What is that all about? The odds of that, it seems kind of suspicious as well, don't you think?
Really? I thought things like this happened all the time. Mike Harris, an American radio host, sent me an email yesterday pointing out that it was Malaysia that just had the trials of Netanyahu and George W. Bush convicting them of war crimes. Now, is that enough to, let's say, encourage someone to be involved in, killing 298 people? And I look at the people I might point my fingers at and frankly tell you they killed 298 people before lunch and not even notice it.
Yeah, that's right.
The other story, and this I have a love-hate relationship with Chris Bolin, an investigative reporter who had been with the American Free Press. Bolin had stated that he found and presented photographs of a 777ER painted in specifically, says Malaysian Airlines on it.
Yeah, I know. We had him on the program. We actually talked about that. And I mean, he's right here then, potentially.
Well, it's that story is just hit now. And then how you tie this in. And Bolin, I've gone through a lot with Chris recently over 9/11 issues. And I don't know if you're aware of this necessarily.
I've seen a little bit about that. I think it's unfortunate that it occurs on that level, it's kind of a shame that it's instead of looking at people have in common, it focuses on the differences and turns into fights, which I think is unnecessary. But there you go. It is what it is.
I have books sitting here next to my desk, written by Chris Bolin, autographed to me as gifts. And, we've known each other for a long time. I'm not an investigative reporter. I'm a defense specialist. I do this for a living. I spent 40 years in intelligence. I run an aerospace company. I run the world's largest private intelligence group. And typically when I want information, I get it. Now, and this is a minor aside here. Chris had more or less come after me, and I wasn't sure why. And I don't dislike Chris. And you like Chris. Whole point.
Yeah.
The issue was, and this may be interesting to people, heaven only knows, but nanothermite. And I work in defense. I work in the area of nuclear weapons from time to time. I have on staff nuclear weapons specialists. I work with the nuclear labs. I know how to make a nuclear weapon. I really know how. I also understand nanoscience moderately well because I've got a lot of people a lot smarter than me working for me. I know nanothermite never existed. So I challenged Chris to bring forward a manufacturer who had actually manufactured nanothermite. And it took him some time. And then I called them. And I said, yeah, we made a tenth of a gram, and it didn't work. And did anyone else make it? Said, no, we own the patents. No one's ever made nanothermite. It's never worked. It was only 30% stronger than standard thermite.
not even a quality welding agent. It never existed. Plus, of course, the physics don't fit. It reminds me, I'll give you another story here. Heaven forbid you can edit this out. A few years ago, Dmitry Kolesov, and that's the former Soviet nuclear weapons intelligence officer, had sent me a CNN article. This is out of the, off their website, on an apartment block bombing in Rostov. Now, the this, and you know, if, since you're in that region of the world, for those people out here in the U.S., they have no idea what it's like to walk into a Russian apartment block. But
that's right. Yeah, exactly.
The walls are 3 feet thick. You go into the bathroom. The toilet's got a, the thing is like a, like something off a submarine. When you're flushing, you want to get out of the room because you'll disappear down there. But it's perfectly designed. If General Guderian shows up again with his tanks, you'll be able to hide there and shoot it out with him. Well, this apartment block, which would have housed thousands of people, was just obliterated from the face of the earth. And the Russians' response to this is that it was a bomb placed in a postal van. You know, a Russian postal van will hold at least 3 or 4 sacks of mail. This one, however, held 300 tons of TNT. And according to the article in CNN, in a single postal van, which and that takes you back to another story. How many elephants can you place in a Volkswagen? Do you know?
No.
4. 2 in the front, 2 in the back.
Right.
Well, toward this end, how do you put 143,000 tons of non-existent nanothermite into moving vans?
How much was needed again? You said, what was the number there?
143,000 tons.
That's quite a bit.
that was the number people came up with. Now, what we had happen here, and this is where we leave all of this behind, and it's where I probably, and excuse me for kind of off-tracking you here on 17, because frankly, if we stick our nose into this far enough, you know, and we're either going to have made a real mistake and be embarrassed, but how can you be embarrassed when whoever would debunk you is always lying anyway? You'll never see the truth published. So if there's a story that disagrees with you, it can't be believed anyway. There's a two-edged sword to that. It allows people to just fabricate anything they want, knowing that no one believes the mainstream news anyway, and it's become a cottage industry, amateurs just inventing whatever they want. And the failure of the mainstream news has made this possible, and it's not a gift to those of us that are a tad more careful.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you a little background here on where Chris and I, and I think that's pretty much put away, you know. I've invited Chris out to a drink to settle this nicely.
Well, I hope you guys find some common ground and move onward from
fine.
There. Yeah,
we're fine.
Yeah,
no issue with Chris. And Chris had never gotten, you know, we get into these ad hominem, and you're referring to an article in Veterans Today that had gone after Chris. And I will tell you that our managing editor, Jim W. Dean, chastised those people doing this because he found it to be divisive and destructive.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
We don't tell people what to write, but it was the wrong thing to write. And that going after, and I know if you live with a computer screen in front of you and after a while it begins to look like reality, the idea that somebody puts a bad comment up or somebody sends you an unpleasant email is like a real life thing. And I probably do, you know, at least, you know, 3 trips a month to the Middle East or Africa. And even there, I live in a filtered world of meetings and hotel lobbies. And at no given time, typically, do you and I, or at least particularly me, at 65 years old or whatever, if I try to get in front of any issue like Gaza or into this,
I was in Pakistan a couple of years ago, scheduled to go into the Swat Valley with General Kiani. And the U.S. Embassy called up and said, I can't be put at risk, which is laughable because they just as soon run me over with a truck anyway. I'm not on their A-list, although I'm a U.S. military contractor. I caused them a tremendous amount of difficulty.
Right.
But, you know, my life as a hero here is generally involved in five-star hotels, first-class airline flights, and riding around in armored cars, which, by the way, in Ghana, I was in an accident in one and ended up in the hospital. Never get into an armored car unless they let you drive.
Right.
There has been one huge breakthrough here. And this is what I'm finding most disturbing. This is what matters more than all of this. And this is where I would have the focus be, you know, heaven forbid, whatever weight I can throw behind things. About 8 weeks ago, I was approached by a genuine intelligence source. And they sent me a portion of a document. The document, and this I have found to be the most controversial, and I've seen the Majestic documents. This is the most controversial document on this planet today. It's the 2003 Department of Energy Sandia study of 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
The Russians got this, and they told me, I have an email here from them. From not Russian naval intelligence guaranteeing me, we absolutely didn't get this from Edward Snowden because he didn't have the right clearances to bring it here, which the first thing I assumed, so you're saying you got it from Edward Snowden, right? This was a 75 meg file with supporting documents, and these are involving the use of nuclear weapons. And these documents were from the late 50s through the 70s. These were published documents. Some were redacted and some were declassified for the report. Some were still classified, and I have not published those. Some had nuclear weapons formulas. I'm being told that if I were to publish, I'd be gone.
Right.
Over the past several weeks, I've been publishing them along with key sections of the report, which they forwarded, all of the important sections. The last one, if you go into Veterans Today, the individual, and I had handed this story off to Ian and Don, the people responsible for much of the cat fight with Chris Bolin, and Jim Dean had written the intro. They had sent a series of questions after reviewing some of this report. I work with people at Sandia Labs, the U.S. Nuclear Weapons Lab.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
People there have come to us and have, where do you go with this? It's such a nightmare. Sandia claims that they built thermometric two-stage nuclear weapons. And this is where I get several people off the hook, that these are 1 to 3 kiloton nuclear weapons. And I have, if you go through the articles here, I have published all of the physics on the weapons design here, where it is inexorable. It's been up for several weeks. No one has challenged it. It comes straight out of Sandia.
Right.
They said, go ahead and do it. If you go in today's article, I have physics there. Specifically, not just on thermobaric nuclear weapons, and there is nothing published anywhere in the world on those, but specifically on how they were designed to bring down the World Trade Center.
Huh.
The articles are written by the nuclear weapon development teams. These are written by Sandia. They submitted questions, they sent answers, and I have hundreds of pages from these guys so far. And they'll answer if you read these and you have questions. Frankly, they're giving me anything I want. The government about...
Are you suspicious of that? Of why they're just, at this point, handing out the information about this?
I was, and I have the ability to look into this. Among the people that came forward is an individual in witness protection who is involved in what he claims were the theft of 350 W-54 nuclear warheads from the Pentex facility in Amarillo, Texas. Now, the individual that came forward, however, is a former employee of the IAEA, who's especially in particular is what we call pit sorting. I don't know if you know what that is.
No, I've not heard that term. Maybe you can explain it to our audience.
Well, if you were, let's say, if you were dealing with nuclear weapons that had reached the point that they were no longer functional, plutonium deteriorates at a certain percentage a year. And by the way, I've published the exacting figures on how that works. You find a number of pits that have been produced in the same run at the same facility at, let's say, the huge U.S. facility at Hanford. Because you can only remanufacture, melt down plutonium, and make, let's say, three pits. And a pit is the center of a nuclear weapon. It's the plutonium or uranium that is responsible for the primary in a fission bomb, and the primary or secondary, both, in a fission bomb. But the if you're taking, let's say, a series of three pits that are 15 years old and they're no longer capable of exploding, what was decided was to go after the old W-54 pits. Now, these were nuclear artillery from 155 cannons that we'd stored in Europe. We had built 400 of these. And though these were not a large nuclear weapon, the pit was very, very large, and the small explosion was contained by a suppressed initiator design within the weapon itself. Mm-hmm. It had a slow reaction. So these were only 30 kilotons or so in output, which is considered fairly small, unless you're living under where one of them goes off, in which case they'd be very unpleasant.
No doubt.
To fit into these shells, these were egg-shaped, but very heavy and very oversized. They could only use these pits because they could be matched. You could take three from an individual manufacturing series at Hanford or one of the other U.S. facilities. They could be melted down and turned into two new pits with the crusty area on the outside, and it's called americum. And that would, and of course, the plutonium would turn, and I've got the specifics on this published, so please go through this if you have an interest in Veterans Today under my name.
Yeah.
We have published their papers on how nuclear weapons deteriorate. We have manuals on the maintenance of nuclear weapons. In fact, I've even thought I might want to go into the business of refurbishing nuclear weapons because I apparently have all the right people to do it. They call cleaning a pit, by the way, they call it armoring, which is an American product used for cleaning dashboards on car. That's another bit of nuclear weapons humor. What we had learned from the process, they went after these American pits because our reactors turn out very pure plutonium and uranium, and we put out several pits per series. So you can always find the ones from the same series. If you mix them, they blow up, and that's very bad. You can't mix plutonium or uranium that was produced at a different time. Huh. It will go very hostile on you.
Interesting.
And we have the physics on how this is done, and I'm not going to explain it because, frankly, I don't understand it. But, I admit my limitations. In the process, when interviewing our friend from the IAEA, a number of things came out. Stolen nuclear weapons from the Pentex facility, taken by refrigerator truck, stored in a fertilizer plant in the city of West Texas, a plant that was later obliterated in a mysterious explosion.
When was that, by the way? What year was that?
That's only 2012, I believe.
Huh. Okay.
They mention one of the people who had tried to stop this was a CIA agent named Roland Carnaby. And Roland Carnaby was executed after being pulled over by a Houston police officer who simply, during a traffic stop, shot him. The individual from the IAEA said that was done on the orders of the Mossad. And then I asked, well, who trafficked the weapons? And they said they were being trafficked by Victor Boat. You know who that is?
No, I don't, actually. I haven't heard the name before. Remind us. Okay.
Victor Boat would be, if you saw the movie The Lords of War, that would be, and I'm trying to think, and someone can call in your own show here when this is on, but explain who Victor Boat is, but was a CIA arms trafficker, a Russian, who was extradited from Thailand 2 years ago in an American prison. He was in Thailand with Dmitry Kolesov. Now, since May 1st, I will add, Dmitry Kolesov has been in a Thai prison to silence him. And that if any of your listeners will please contact any Thai consulate or embassy and please stress that they release Dmitry Kolesov, who is our bureau chief there, and we'd like to see him let loose.
Yeah. Hmm.
And I did a check the other day at how many people at Veterans Today had done time, people like Lee Wanta and others, Mark Siljander. Veterans Today editors alone have done 200 years in prison.
Wow.
That means we've got a huge, huge editorial staff of people who do weekends for drunk driving, or some people who've been locked away for a long time for some very specific things that you generally qualify as political crimes. The story had gone that Victor Boot had been involved in transporting these nuclear weapons out of Houston through the Canary Islands and then to Mauritania, where they were stored in an iron mine. That was guarded by South African owned, guarded by South African special forces. And we have located that facility. They were then transported to Tel Aviv. Now, why was Israel looking for these weapons? And for this, I went to my chief of staff, Colonel James Hankey. Jimmy was former G2 of NATO. Operations officer for Third Army, if you're familiar with NATO commands. That's the biggest NATO command. And finished his career with U.S. Special Forces as attaché to Israel. He's a longtime friend of Netanyahu. They lived next to each other for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy was assigned in 1990, and this is pretty secret, but that's 1990, so we'll tell you anyway. Jimmy was given a special pair of shoes. That's Colonel Hankey there. But because he and Ambassador Pickering were being taken for a tour of the Dimona facility. And the U.S. wanted to know, well, his shoes were there supposedly to pick up materials that would tell us about that plant. It was always a key issue to the U.S. spying on Dimona.
Right.
What I've learned from the IAEA is that Dimona, due to a proton surge from overuse of the facility to create nuclear weapons, was damaged irreparably and has not been able to produce anything past 25% enrichment since 1988, meaning that by 9/11, there wasn't a single nuclear weapon in Israel's arsenal with an Israeli pit. They were all stolen.
All of them?
Israel has not produced a nuclear pit since 1988. Dimona cannot. Not only that, they went over, and I've published all of this. This is why, you know, heaven forbid, you know, I should put things in books, but then I'd have to go on book tours. And then later I'd find out that half the stuff I wrote was wrong and I'd have all these books in my garage. So we're trying not to do that as much as we can. It's right. One of these things When I get new information and I've been wrong about something, I have two choices. I can blindly follow the old information and be an idiot, or I can maintain that flexibility saying this is the best of my knowledge now and explain why I know things. And this learning that Dimona had been down, that 350 American warheads had been stolen. Further, the IAEA, and it's the International Atomic
Energy Agency,
thank you very much, also indicated that weapons that Boot and his Israeli partners had sold weapons to South Korea, Taiwan, Brazil, Saudi Arabia, and others.
Really?
Saudi Arabia bought 11 nuclear weapons from them. Brazil has 20.
Wow. And this is obviously, when did Vanunu speak out about this, Dimona? That was in the...
Well, see, this was the issue I had. I was wondering which side of this Vanunu was on. And Vanunu took off in 1986.
86, that's right.
And dispatched within 88.
Yeah.
Because that's the first thing I looked at because I had the information from Vanunu, who had also pointed out that that the facility had been abused terribly. Now, I have the specifics on why it went down. I have the exacting information. And from any of this, if on these areas you have specific questions, and I'm saying take the time to make sure you ask questions to get the best answers.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm currently getting answers to everything I send in, the kind of answers you'd want. And I'm telling you, take advantage of it while I'm still an A-list guy now.
Let me just halt you right in your tracks there. We're going to just take a short break here, Gordon, and then we're going to pick up right with your story right after the break here. Just briefly for our listeners, please give us all the details about the website quickly. Tell us if there's anything else you want to mention in terms of what you have written or if you have any other material out there that people can check out more from you about Gordon. So give us those details.
Yeah, we're veteranstoday.com. In the U.S., I almost have to call us last man standing. We're not alternative press, although we've become very large. We operate multiple servers. We've got news bureaus in 24 countries. We have a fairly large staff. We have the largest readership. We have our own radio networks. I reach probably between 5 and 10 radio listeners, 10 million radio listeners a week, literally. And I would just as soon have this be a hobby because we don't accept advertising. We don't accept donations. We are mostly retired military and intelligence professionals. And we were doing this to have fun. And then you wake up and find that you're accountable for what you're doing. And toward that end, I'm finding that I have to be careful about what I say. And
sure. Yeah.
It's nice to tweak people. It's nice to have fun with people, but, we're dealing in a very dangerous place, and Veterans Today very much has the only real seat at the table of all of the alternative media. We are I would call us the antithesis of InfoWars. We're just like InfoWars, except we don't lie.
And you talk about Israel and Zionism.
We're under constant attack because we have a lot of Jews at Veterans Today, I'm an Obama supporter. I'm a political liberal.
Wow.
I'm
really
aligned with the Jewish left and the left in the U.S. We could get into that discussion, but I know you'd like to do a break, When I add up all of the information of the horrors of Obama and Hillary Clinton, and then I look to where it actually came from, I see the American Enterprise Institute, the Jamestown Foundation, the Potomac Institute, and the RAND Corporation as being the Heritage Foundation, I'll add them also, which are rabid Zionist groups. that are decidedly un-American. So when I'm told that the president was born in Kenya, for instance, well, I know Raila Odinga, and I Joe Mutombo, who heads their legislature, is a longtime friend and business partner. I work in Kenya. They think all of this is crazy. Matter of fact, they even told me that no one has ever really gone to Kenya and made any attempt to verify any of it. It was easier to just make it all up rather than to get on a plane and to try to at least invent a story.
Well, Dinesh D'Souza did, right? He went down and visited his half-brother, George Obama, down there.
Well, there has been no attempt to ascertain any records about the president being born there, and everyone within the government thinks it's utterly insane.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, take you back to that period of time. Let's make you a female. You're living in Hawaii. You're white. You're going to have a black baby. Let's move you to Ghana. Now, first of all, let's put a pregnant woman on a plane when it took our Ghana. This is Kenya, rather. These are propeller planes, okay? It takes me 30 hours to fly to Kenya through Dubai, 30 hours. And I get to sleep, and they give me good champagne and 40-year-old scotch sitting at the front of a Lufthansa plane. But you try the four-day journey getting there and the $10,000 it would cost, all to make sure that you had a baby where the first nurse who saw it would put a pillow over its face. The story is improbable, outlandish. It's childishly insane. People must not have known the world at the time. They knew nothing about Kenya at the time. They certainly don't understand air travel. They don't understand that pregnant women weren't even allowed on planes at the time, or what that journey would have entailed. And the idea of the hospital systems in Kenya, it's one of many utterly outlandish things. We have a president here. How can you be a bad guy when Martin Dempsey is chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and Chuck Hagel runs the Department of Defense? Those are the two biggest white hats we've got. Now, on the other hand, let's say we were going to go after Obama because he doesn't speak openly to the American people because he doesn't trust them. You know, I don't speak openly to the American people, and I don't trust them either. I will say what I do because I don't care, but I will tell you about 20 people a week threaten to blow my car up.
Mm-hmm.
Is Obama perfect? No. If you live in the U.S., has he tried to give us a $15 minimum wage instead of seven? Yes. Has he tried to give us decent health care? Yes. Has he tried to eliminate mortgage fraud? Yes. Has he tried to regulate Wall Street? Yes. Has he tried to cut our defense budget? Yes. Did he fail to go to war with Iran? Yes. Did he fail to go to war over the Ukraine? Yes. Did he fail to go to a war over Kenya? Yes. Or over Kenya, sorry, over. I'm having one of those days here from sitting up too long. Syria, rather.
Syria, yeah.
He sat all of those out. The people that hate him most and call themselves constitutionalists want Bush and Cheney back. How do you feel about that?
We should have none of them back. I mean, Obama is a traitor towards America. That's how I see it from my angle. Anyway, and I see how he's trying to bring in socialism that has destroyed my country, Sweden, for many years. And we're just going down the tubes with it.
We live essentially in a police state. When Bush left, our economy had crashed. Our stock market, which is at 17,000, was at 6,700.
Mm-hmm.
Employment had hit 10%. It's at 6% now. Are there good jobs in the U.S.? No, they've all been shipped out of the country. But socialism, what aspect of his programs would you call socialism?
Well, the healthcare system, for one, and just, redistribution of wealth. He's constantly talking about how equality is the issue in America. But, I mean, when he's importing poverty into the country, which people have talked about in terms of this immigration issue and the open borders to the south and everything, then how are you going to solve an issue like that, you know?
Are you aware that he tried to block immigration and the Republican Party wouldn't fund the efforts to close the border and then attacked him for not closing the border after they blocked the funding?
Well, anything is possible. I think in the situation where you have neocons in charge of you know, a lot of it. And these are not conservatives, of course. These are, you know, coming out from the New York intellectuals and that kind of school. They're more Trotskyites than anything, you know.
Hendrik, you're talking to a former Washington lobbyist here, okay? I'm a member of the Republican National Committee. I've lived in this area. I've got congressmen on staff here, former congressmen. I'll tell you current ones too. From outside the U.S., if you read what is made available to you, especially from America's, and I'll call it the, you know, the Trotskyite left, and we do have those people. The U.S. is a series of monopolies run by organized crime. The healthcare industry in the U.S. is very much organized crime. I'm a disabled veteran. I had a back injury in April. I did my first day of physical therapy this week with a back injury where you would have been in hospital in a day. 3.5 months later, I get an MRI next week. And you understand I run the largest veterans organization in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
If I was a regular citizen. There is this, and we could go around and around on this. And this is, I worked initially for Adlai Stevenson in 1956. I worked for Robert Kennedy. I've been in politics a long time. I've been suggested to run for president, which I thought was crazy. Stu Webb announced it, and I had a bunch of people offer me money to run for president. Frankly, they offered me enough money to run for president, which frightened me even more, since no sane person would serve as president. The issues of socialism here. In the Midwest, I live in Ohio. We have a governor, John Kasich. We have Rick Snyder in Michigan. Most of the states around us have Republicans. They're all bought and paid for by Sheldon Adelson. He owns them all. He paid for the election here. He actually spent $10 million on our gubernatorial election. It's not just union busting here. The Republican Party, what they've done basically, and I don't know how to put this to you and to do so peacefully somehow, because there are few who see it, and so much is spent. When you talk about Zionists controlling the press in the United States,
mm-hmm.
all of the press, including the alternative press, and I mean 90% of that, 90% of us are thems.
Give us a few examples of that. You can't just say that. You have to preface that. Well, I mean,
let's see. I can say Salem News, Veterans Today. I could say that antiwar.com is run. I could say Counterpunch is run. I could certainly say What Really Happened is run. We'd almost have to spend a fair amount of time going through this, more than we'll ever have available. But when you take a strong look at the alternative news in the U.S. compared to who they were 2 years ago, they're all neocons. They're almost all rabid Zionists. Those people that are anti-Israel we call it the men in black syndrome. I hate Israel, and now I'm going to go get on my flying saucer and go to planet Kira and talk to my reptilian shapeshifter friends, and they hate Israel also, if you get what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Poison pill people.
Mm-hmm.
We see little else. Now, my background is in psychological warfare. I worked for an intelligence agency for a number of years in that area. I have Colonel Eugene Khrushchev, who ran Russia's psychological warfare program, on my staff. I have others that have done the same thing. We understand it very well. There is absolutely no move whatsoever in the U.S. toward any kind of redistribution of wealth or socialism. That's a wild conspiracy theory.
Is that why the middle class are getting hit the hardest right now?
The middle class? I'm maybe middle class. I don't know what middle class counts at.
Taxes are going up and up. I mean, that's...
No, taxes are coming down and down, and the middle class has never done so well in the U.S.
Wow, okay.
How do we lose money if the stock market's at 17,000? Now, what we aren't making, the Fed has kept interest rates at nothing. So if you have cash out there, you make nothing from it. The lowest sector of the economy is still suffering. Minimum wage is $7 an hour. It costs $15 an hour to live. Unemployment is down. The middle class, high technology jobs, jobs for the educated, employment is higher than it's ever been. The taxes for middle class are much lower than they've ever been here, with the exception of, remember, we have states. Now, in the states that are run by Republicans, the taxes are extremely high. The other thing to recognize is that no bill passes Congress without getting through the Republican House of Representatives. That was control of that was taken over through gerrymandering. And frankly, the economic reforms that would have made, that would have lowered taxes for the middle class, which is Obama's policy, have been continually blocked by the people who are telling you they're complaining about socialism. And that group are the Zionists that control organized crime in the U.S., control financial crime, control insurance, control banking, control the arms industry, control oil, have run food prices through the roof. And we fight them at every turn here.
Now, I do believe we're talking around each other a little bit here. I mean, obviously, I agree with you 100% that a lot of the issues that are caused by all of this is Zionists run and control. So I'm not going to argue about that. But I feel it's this kind of either or type of mentality in the U.S. that unfortunately have destroyed the system. They are both on the same issues here to a large extent.
Henrik, controlled
opposition. I mean, they're pushing for the same. There's not much difference between the parties. That's what I'm saying in the U.S.
Henrik, I love you like a redheaded stepchild. You know that. But if anything, I can tell you what the strongest psyops are in this country. If you want to know what a real psyop is, in order to get the big business candidates, and we have five members of the Supreme Court that are owned by organized crime, the ones who put Bush in, the ones that passed Citizens United, which allows unlimited organized crime funding of our elections. The message is this: your vote counts for nothing, don't bother, because if they do, you put a Republican in office. Now, one of the other ones, of course, is telling people, and this is around the world, and you're not the only one. Everybody that I know, and I would end up sitting down with you, it'd be for a week. We'd have to go through the specifics of how Washington works, but the dynamics are not like any other country. If you look at the parliamentary system in Britain, You've got a prime minister that drives around in an ordinary car. The president of the United States has a 500-car motorcade with a flight of jets, three helicopters overhead, entire states closed down when they drive through. We've become an imperial monstrosity here. What we've also become, we've become awfully deceitful. And to this extent, when you look at both parties being the same, and you actually sit here in Toledo, Ohio, and I'm in a rust belt city of auto workers, and they make car windshields and solar panels here. This is that sort of place. That the battle between Republican and Democrat is very much a battle over two issues. The wealthy who have, and I don't know if you hear the comic routines about this, that managed to fool the most ignorant of Americans to vote for people who hate them. You run into the Republican Party, and I've been involved in it as much as possible. And frankly, this is one of my own issues. For running the country, the Democrats do a far better job. The markets do better. People do better. The U.S. does better. The Republican Party is very internationalist. It's very much secret shadow government, and it's totally Israeli controlled. It's funny, but 70% of America's Jews voted for Obama, but Zionist money, 100% of it goes to the Republican Party.
Is that why Obama is in there right now then?
to a large extent. The other thing that's very powerful here is racism.
Let me ask you a question. Do you sincerely believe that more socialist democracy is going to fix America, as we have in Sweden, for example?
President Obama is moderately right-wing and moderately conservative. What used to be our conservatives here are essentially bandits from organized crime who are doing nothing but pump and dumps and looting this country. We don't have two parties. We've got a Democratic or liberal party that's gone very conservative on us. There is no social welfare network in this country, by the way. All of what you're hearing is, when you get down to the details, all of what you're hearing falls apart. And the other side are simply paid for. And I remember, this is 1990, they were trying to get me to run for Congress. And of course, the idea here, and you can guess this, that Gordon, you can have a seat in Congress as long as you promise to do everything we tell you to do. You know, good luck with that one. People go to Washington, and it turns them into something. The city is like a hot zone for the disease of greed. You promise yourself that you're only going to steal for a few years, and then you're going to get that honest program through that's going to help people. As soon as you've taken enough money to make sure that your family is going to never have to work forever, or all your kids get to go to Harvard, or that everyone you know has got a couple of Mercedes, you know, you'll never meet anyone that's ever stolen enough. And Washington is about people who are all dealing with that challenge. When have I stolen enough? And no one has ever says enough. But the two parties the same? No, it's very much good and bad. One of them, the Republican Party, controls the media entirely and spends every day, the right wing that controls the media, Rupert Murdoch and others.
That's Fox, by the way, but who runs MSNBC and CNN? Are that all Republicans?
Yes. All.
And that's why they're pushing the Democratic wing and constantly criticizing the Republicans on every news shows, as you can see.
they do quite the opposite. They're incredibly anti-Obama, and they criticize the president incessantly.
So let me ask you, Gordon, quickly, how would you, so we can get an idea, a little bit of a flavor here, I guess, how would you preferably, let's say you got into office, right? Let's say you even became president. Let's go full on out on this. Tell us what you would want to do and how you would want to run the country, America.
We're supposedly a constitutional democracy. It's a ludicrous joke. Under the Articles of Confederation, we were a democracy. The democracy in the U.S. was overthrown by our Constitution that created three branches of government. We had a legislative, judicial, and executive. Within our legislative branch, we were given a Senate, which was like the House of Lords. And what few Americans remember, but for the first 135 years of the U.S. history, the Senate was appointed, not elected. Right now, we have a 9-member Supreme Court. 5 members of our Supreme Court, a majority, are totally controlled by organized crime. 2 of them are functionally illiterate. It's like we're a banana republic. There's nothing you can't pass through the Supreme Court if you've got enough money. My first move would to be arrest and impeach 5 members of the Supreme Court. My next move would be to reinforce the constitutional provision for equal protection and overturn the reapportioning of America's legislature, which allowed the Republican Party to take control of the House of Representatives with only 37% of the electorate. And they've been able to do this with minority votes consistently. And this is the Tea Party, and the Tea Party is a group of these people are crazy. I would invite you over here. You can stay here if you want, and there are worse places than you can stay. I've got a great wine cellar, a wonderful kitchen here, and go out and talk to people. You'll find
nowhere in the, and I live in Germany part of the year. My kids live there and I work out of Britain. There is nowhere in Europe you can go and talk to a working person or and you'll find people that are angry about Muslims or angry about something.
You got that right.
But nowhere is it like here. Nowhere. Nowhere do you have the level of self-defeating ignorance you have here.
I have a lot of idiots in Sweden, and when I travel around in Europe, there's a lot of people who have their heads up their bleep, but perception.
I've got a daughter in Sweden.
How does she like it?
She thinks everybody's crazy there.
And yeah, they are crazy there. Look at all the Muslims that are letting in. The country is going backwards. Culturally, we've been completely, utterly destroyed. And the cultural Marxists in place have utterly destroyed our heritage and our culture. And we're going to, if we don't step up to the plate, we're going to lose here in a 5, 10, 15 years, you know?
And see, we're not so much confronted with that as a nation that's likely to be balkanized at some point. We've allowed ourselves to be polarized, to go absolutely crazy, and we're being bullied by a government. And I'm saying that there are very few in Washington. I don't know if you've ever heard of from the 1930s, Governor Huey Long of Louisiana. If you haven't, you might want to look into him. Of course, he was murdered as governor, but you wouldn't have to be very surprised if I went in and arrested most of the people in our government. And frankly, I have enough on them already that it wouldn't be a big stretch. The government is run by people who will stay in office, some of them for 30 or 40 years.
Yeah, they're exactly professional politicians. There's not a representative republic anymore in America. And that's one of the main issues, you know?
It's not even close. Within the Beltline, you understand if somebody dropped a 30 megaton nuclear weapon on Washington, D.C. and New York, and frankly, I love New York, you know, but Washington, D.C. certainly, that Americans would have to stop for a couple of minutes to think if they had reason to be upset. And there would be far more of a sigh of relief through the entire country. This country has been taken apart.
How about Hollywood and L.A. then? If you want to talk about who's influencing, the people in the world with entertainment and media and everything else.
Well, it can go show by show. We have, there's this Jewish control of the media thing. And, it's been around since the 1920s, since the war with Edison over who controlled the rights to the movie projector.
They stole it.
Yes. And the other one you can go, of course, is the war with Tesla. And it's part of the same battle, essentially. It's possible to sit Americans down. And I do this in business. I run a company. Our primary investors are the UAE. Our equity partners, as far as capabilities, and we're military and intelligence, aerospace, are a combination of American-Israeli. We usually meet in Dubai. We all sit at the table together with partners from Africa, and it's our job. We're capitalists. We're here to make money for our stockholders, provide a work environment that will accomplish what we wish. We protect the assets and capabilities of the company, and it's my job, since we have Earth satellites and very unique, powerful technologies, I frankly make sure that they're not ill-used, and the stockholders can, and board of directors, which I sit on, can get rid of me or not for doing that. But that's, I would like to think, I'm not always sure, that I'm there for that reason, that you can invest in. I won't mention the name of the company to invest in on the London and Frankfurt Exchange, because that would be wrong, but that we are answerable. When I sit down with the head of state and I tell them that Boko Haram is being run by the CIA and MI6, first of all, they're not surprised. And secondly,
thank God somebody from the United States has come in front of me and not lied to my face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you follow around what I do, I have access to pretty much anyone because I represent an awful lot of money. It's other people's money to a large extent, but it's what I do. And I wasn't that long ago. I was sitting at an African summit and answering intelligence questions. By the way, all this is filmed. If you never want to see it, the first question I got was, Gordon, first of all, where's Flight 370? And why didn't your satellite phalanx pick it up?
Mm-hmm.
And, we get back to your earlier discussion. Who can make an airliner disappear? And the systems on 370, it didn't blip into Rolls-Royce every few minutes. It ran 16 constant data feeds. It had 5 satellite feeds plus a Raytheon anti-hijacking system on the plane, which allowed the fly-by-wire autopilot to auto-land the plane if it were hijacked. And that's on every fly-by-wire plane. That Raytheon system is patented, and we, Chip Tatum, published all of the information on that patent on Veterans Today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had Chip with us not too long ago. Before we continue there, I did want to ask you a little bit about Gaza right now and stuff like that before we end for this time. But I want to back up just one more question I had about this, because I was curious in terms of the perception of the Republican/Democratic kind of polarization of America. I'm not disagreeing with you about the control of America or that people in power, wherever they are seeking to be there for the sake of their own, interests. Absolutely. We have people, I believe, that are using the system for their own advantage, obviously. However, I just wanted to ask you.
Go ahead.
I believe that they're using the gullible liberals and progressives in America to gain control over people's life equally, if not at the same level of other people who are, let's say, voting for the neocons in power. But do you believe that if all the Republicans got out of office and full control of the country was handed over to the Democrats, that everything in America would be awesome and great, finally?
Everything in America would be much better, but, okay, the Israel lobby would have considerable power. Organized crime.
Let's say that was gone. That's my point. Let's say that the Israel power was gone from America, and only anti-Israeli Democrats were in place. Would it be a great place then?
The power in the U.S., I put the Israel lobby, it's not the most powerful organization. It's the most thorough organization. Most of the money that comes into the U.S. right now is through the drug cartels through Mexico. If anything, if I were to say who runs our government and the Republican Party, give you a story here, and I'll try to do this as quickly as possible. Before the 2012 election, a well-known FBI agent came to me with the file of a presidential candidate. Now, I can't tell you the name of Special Agent Claudio DeLeo, because that would be wrong, because that would verify what I'm saying. Claudio DeLeo allowed himself to be recorded for 6 hours here and gave me the file on Mitt Romney. Included in that file were the lifelong relationship between Romney's family and criminal groups in Mexico through the Mormon Church. His father, who I'd known, by the way, George Romney, I knew when he was governor of Michigan. I'm very involved in Michigan politics. I worked with one American governor Michigan governor was my college roommate. So we've been, and he was in for 12 years. We were good friends. But I have, lots of experience in politics. But the documents DeLeo gave me were photographs of Mitt Romney in Cuba, air manifest showing Mitt Romney and Carlos Salinas flying from Toronto, flying from Veracruz to Cuba. Photographs of Mitt Romney with his mistress. And his mistress was the daughter of Yuri Andropov. The mother's last name was Perez. I have a delightful photo of them. They're both wearing horizontal stripes. And I will tell you, Romney looks great in his shirt. Ms. Perez has thighs like oak trees.
Right.
That woman could crush you like a woman. You'd be done.
Good to know.
I have a letter from Raul Castro outlining his agreement and partnership with Mitt Romney. I have hours of interviews describing Bain Capital and how it holds thousands of private accounts overseas that are used to pay members of America's government, how the drug cartels, and I'm afraid to say, yes, Democrats and Republicans, they are paid billions, and those billions are kept in the Caymans, how Bain Capital operates out of Cuba, how the cartels and how they bring billions into this country. And while I would jump into this, I'll simply tell you, we have states like Arizona, Utah, Nevada, where the drug cartels, you talk about your problem with Muslims, the drug cartels come into those areas. They take over businesses in Cochise County in Arizona, where Fort Huachuca is, where I have defense facilities. They murdered the sheriff, one of our friends, replaced him with a puppet, and then began pouring money into the county until turning it over to the Mexican cartels, and that money is being laundered through foundations owned by the Walton family, the owners of the Walmart chain.
Mm-hmm.
According to DeLeo, are the largest money launderers for organized crime in the world. I have 6 hours of specifics, all recorded here, debriefing about how many politicians, and yes, you're right, both political parties, are run by the cartels. The money that Adelson and the Koch brothers and others are giving away compared to the cartel money is ridiculous. We have at least 35% of the United States is run by the cartels. Now, I live south of Detroit, and this is a very different circumstance because, I spend most of my time or have over the last couple of decades in Europe. So when you go to certain towns like Antwerp or Narbonne or other...
Antwerp, oh my God. Have you been there recently?
Oh, yeah, I know what you're saying here.
Oh, jeez.
There are areas that I cannot walk the streets with my wife. I'm not safe.
That's right. I've been there. Yes. I was there a couple of years ago. I couldn't believe it. Where am I?
And if you had someone guarding you, it'd probably be me. You know, I'm a bit of a thug here, but I am seeing this. When I go to Detroit, and you get to see Detroit all the time, of course, it looks like Hiroshima for the most part. On the southern end of Detroit is off I-75. That's the major highway that goes north and south through the central eastern U.S. is Mexican Town. Mexican Town has 1 million people in it, in a city that only has a legal population of 680,000, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Mexican Town has no crime. Mexican Town has perfect lawns, really good restaurants.
I want to see that. I'd love to go there. Check that out. And
fly into Detroit. It's cheap for you. I'll come and pick you up, get you a place to stay. And you can shoot guns here, and heaven forbid I own more guns than God.
Well, that's good. You need guns to protect yourself and your own family.
But this is, we're not sure how to explain this, okay?
Well, I mean, let me say this. Mexican Town is safe because it's homogenous among the people. And if you actually were to put a lot of white neighborhoods in there, I'd like to see how much the crime would rise.
And then as you get through, and this is on Verner Highway, you drive through Mexican Town, which was a blighted area that's totally restored, stores open, people walking around, families. Then you enter Dearborn, Michigan. Dearborn, Michigan is the largest
Muslim community. I've seen images from there. My God, it was amazing how much the Christians that were walking through town there were attacked, and the cops didn't do anything. I've seen the footage from there.
You know, and the real Dearborn, Michigan, I have a neighbor here that's a Christian Lebanese. And if I mention anything about going to Iran or Syria or whatever, I mean, she goes right through the roof. This is somebody, it's different here because it's the United States. We have a set of rules where in Detroit, on the north end of town, I have Oak Park, I've got Farmington Township and West Bloomfield. And those are the largest Jewish communities outside New York and Tel Aviv. And 5 miles away, I've got a huge Muslim community. And then 10 miles from that, this is all that's left, by the way, this part of Michigan, is the Chaldean Christian community, 300,000. And there is absolutely peace, total peace between these communities, and all of them are very low crime. We have an African-American community in Detroit where those that are successful move to the northern suburbs, and those that aren't live under nightmarish circumstances. And I would tell you to come. I'm serious about that.
So it's bottom line, what you're saying, though, is that it's segregated, correct?
Oh, very, very much so. And yet what you see in Detroit, if you were to go to Denver, Colorado, to an Hispanic neighborhood, and you and I were walking on the streets, I wouldn't give a nickel for our lives.
Why is that? Why is that? Why the difference between these places then? What do they do differently?
The ethnic mix of America is largely dependent on how we were settled. Michigan was settled primarily. My family came to Detroit from Scotland in 1780 in the fur trading business. My great-great-great-grandfather was the second son of the Earl of Fife, you know, cast asunder and sent to the wilds to, you know, and married a French woman, you know. And then when the Americans came to free Detroit, we fled to Canada. You know, we couldn't stand the freedom. It was too much for us, you know. And it's been a tradition. We're a state full of Swedes and Norwegians, of Dutch. West Michigan is, you can speak Dutch there. And the Michigan Thumb area, German is still used. Where I am in Ohio now is entirely German. And then as the as Detroit industrialized, it became Hungarian and Polish, and became, and of course the Germans were Southern Germans, so that it's heavily Catholic. But each area of the U.S. developed in a very different way. In the West, after the American Civil War, many of the people from the West, from the South, who were being horribly oppressed, fled West and settled in those states. And political extremism, religious extremism, and in some ways, great food, charming, decent people.
But awful racists, right?
I'm just
pulling your leg a little bit. We actually did a really good show recently, Gordon, about the Northern War of Aggression and the lies about the Civil War and the basis that it wasn't over slavery. It was very, very different, actually.
Well, I've got Jim W. Dean is part of the Heritage, runs Heritage TV out of Atlanta. But we have strong ties to that community. And then I work in Africa, and I was with the Ford Foundation in the 70s, Center for African Studies. And I'm, to the extent that of my partners and coworkers are, you know, we are a total racial mix. I work in Ghana and Nigeria and Kenya and Somalia, and I have for many years. I worked in those areas earlier when I worked for a government agency, which will remain unnamed. And it's to some extent where I'm home, but I'm also at home in Tel Aviv, and I don't like it in Zurich for some reason. It's really kind of a dumpy sort of town, you know. I keep an apartment in Paris that's a bit of a rat hole. I like that. I love Scotland, but the people there are not much fun, but Scotland's pretty as can be. You know, the U.S. is, the dynamic in the U.S. is very unusual. And if you were to be in Nebraska and go to a small town somewhere, they would all say, "We hate Negroes here." Well, no Negroes ever driven through or been there, you know.
So, would they really say that?
Yeah, they do. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'd like to have proof for that. Most Americans I've met are some of the most lovely, you know, people. And well, I've traveled around quite a bit in America, too. And they're very nice to everybody and very courteous.
And yet, if someone black drove through town and their car broke down, people would help them. It just Americans love to talk like this. And we've become addicted to mouthy extremism. To irresponsible and stupid ideas. And nobody has a remote understanding how economics work. Obviously, I mean, you know, we get the ideas about socialism. Well, we're involved in a police state large extent controlled by organized crime.
If they didn't understand economics, why was America one of the most powerful engines, economically speaking, in the world? I mean, free market, for Christ's sake, that's what enabled that. Even Sweden, the free market was what enabled our precious welfare state that obviously collapsed in the 90s because it was overloaded. But I digress.
Well, to this extent, how can we have a free market when all of our jobs have been shipped overseas, when you buy an automobile and it's 4 sub-assemblies made in Mexico and Taiwan and wherever, and an auto assembly plant is 28 guys that bolt the front on the back, or actually who watch the robot do it. And all the parts were shipped into the country in containers. And what we've allowed ourselves to do here, you walk into any store and everything is made elsewhere. And the jobs in the U.S., when we gave up our manufacturing base, we've created a people here, who... And I've run manufacturing companies. I was a defense contractor for a number of years. And if you find you don't have people who know how to work a full day, people that only work long enough to try to get fired and on unemployment, or hope to have an accident so they can file for disability.
Jeez,
it's very much that. I work on the other side. I'd like to talk about being middle class, but I'm not. I'm a one percenter.
Those are usually the ones who actually go for the socialist ideology too. I've noticed it's the Fabian society is a classic one of those, and even George Bernard Shaw. You know, a lot of the wealthy people that were kind of enamored and felt guilty for some reason, I think, and that's why they were attracted to some of the fantasy ideas of socialism.
Well, we need to get to know each other better, but I think I have a pretty good understanding of economics. I've spent much of my time doing it, and I understand currency well. I'd work with the UN in the area of currency control. Both Jeff Gates and I have worked for the larger international banking organizations, and I thoroughly understand the disease of debt slavery more than anything. But do you know Jeff Gates?
No, I've heard of him, but I don't know that much.
I would tell you to get guilt by association. Jeff, I taught Jeff the spy business, and Jeff is, as far as economics go, the strongest guy I've ever met. But when you try to apply economic models to organized crime, they just don't work. And America is really organized crime. We're a criminal conspiracy. This is not an economy. There are lots of decent companies in this country Amazon.com is a great employer. Costco and their stores are great employers. Many others that are, and the workers they have. Americans are capable of a day's work, and you've traveled here. There are a few places in the world where people will stand by you or do what Americans will. And yet we all seem to hate each other so much. And right now, this is the scary thing. You're out there being told that we're going down the tubes. I made 80 grand last month in bonds alone. And, you know, if you're one of those wealthy semi-retirees, we're making tons in the market here, and I have made money in the market all but 2 months since Obama took office, and I'm
well. Good for you. Do something good with the money, then. That's what is lacking, I think, for good people to stand up and try to prevent all of this that is happening.
And part of running a defense firm is that we're here to build jobs. And in particular, I try to build jobs for military veterans. Are you familiar with Lee Wanta?
Yeah.
You know, Lee is a longtime friend. We worked together for a number of years, and Lee's $27 trillion is not pulled out of a hat. It's very, very real. And Lee Wanta's idea is to build a high-speed rail system with hotels and other facilities across the U.S. and to create real jobs with real work where all of the equipment and everything is built here.
Mm-hmm.
And more than anything else, well, I've got kids in Germany. I have a daughter-in-law in Germany with a doctorate from the University of Berlin in economics, who works for minimum wage, which is much higher than here, in a daycare center. And that's in that hot, hot German economy you're hearing about. You know, is it that much better in Sweden?
No, it's the unemployment rate among the youth is very, very poor, and specifically among the immigrant community as well. We keep shuffling, you know, funneling them into the country, but nowhere can we take care of them. And a lot of these people end up going on welfare their entire lives, you know?
Well, I've got a daughter going to school in Sweden. I've got a kid in Germany. And then I've got a daughter here that was a registered nurse who worked for 2 years as a store clerk until she could get a nursing job. And you're always told that nurses are in demand. 2 years for an RN to get a job. I've got a couple of kids doing extremely well, and then one working a minimum wage job in a small factory. And my own thing of here, you can call me one of these, you know, bleeding heart liberals, but I have the money to trust fund any of the kids into not having to ever work again, and I do have the understanding that it would destroy their lives. And I have this every day. It's almost heartbreaking watching kids suffer when I could just buy anything they want or give them a home. Or
why wouldn't you want to give your children? Isn't that what you've worked for, to be able to give your offspring, your own DNA and genetics, a good chance in life and a leg up?
Well, the leg up here is money, and you wonder what. I grew up, my father was an auto worker.
Sorry, it doesn't mean you have to spoil them. That's not what I'm talking about. They have to, of course, work and have incentive and try to get somewhere as well. But isn't that what we work for? I mean, look at the wealth redistribution the French were looking at now, where you basically can't leave anything to your children. It's like, you didn't build that. Nothing belongs to you. It's all in the property of the state. And we have French people fleeing and going to Russia, of all places, because they can't stand it anymore, you know?
Well, here, the idea of being able to get a leg up, I'm not sure that's applicable here. And you're saying it's not applicable in Sweden as well.
No, the state takes so much from you that there's nothing left in the day. So we have a scenario where basically there's no incentive of trying to achieve higher, because no matter how much more you work, you have a ultra wealthy bracket, of course, in Sweden, as you do in all countries. That's just how it is. But generally, there's very few kind of distinctions between underneath there or divisions. So basically, you know, the more you make, the more they take. And so eventually you have people who are those who are entrepreneurs and actually have creative ideas and stuff like that, who are actually could actually call, you know, build corporations that could actually employ a lot of people, end up leaving Sweden altogether. And they, in that regard, they're kind of outsourcing those entrepreneurs and those creative people, which is very unfortunate, of course.
But in the U.S., we have fairly low taxes on the wealthy here. They pay almost no tax.
But they still provide, what is it, 60% of the yearly, I saw the statistics on this as well. I think the top 1% or something paid 60% of all the taxes.
Oh, no, that's totally wrong.
I'll send you that. I'll show you what I mean.
I sit at about, I don't know, I sit at a 17% bracket, and I'm well into that group you're talking about at 17%. Now, I have a state income tax. Now, to some extent, like other, I have economic activities where I had initially nestled myself into Luxembourg, but none of us here, you know, the idea of expatriate money, since the Swiss opened their banking systems, as have others, you don't hide money anymore as an American. You clearly don't. But one of the things Bush did Well, here's a classic. Okay, here's a classic neocon game. In Michigan, Governor Rick Snyder promised to lower taxes. The first thing when he went in, he put pensions on taxation. Pensions weren't taxed. He taxed pensions. So an average automobile worker in just his state, this is a retired automobile worker, for his state income tax alone, pays $1,500 that he didn't. To the same extent, we have this stealth. If anything, the conservatives have been bleeding the middle class dry. You can't bleed the lower classes other than by, and if you want to call gasoline profits here, we have the gasoline futures market is run by the Koch brothers. Now, I'm only paying $3.50 a gallon for gasoline, but I'm in a country based on tax and our refining costs where gasoline, you very well know, could cost $2 a gallon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That if I buy it's only because it's so much worse where you are. If I buy an English roast or a chuck roast or whatever you would call it, and very few people in other countries would consider doing this, it is now about $4.50 a pound instead of $1.79 a pound. Prices have gone up this much on foodstuffs. What our government has done, and all of these areas in government that you are saying that Obama was involved in, are all carryover power.
Well, that's my point. I think we're talking around each other a little bit. I'm not just saying that, oh, things were great under Bush. I mean, he's a neocon. He's continuing. That's what I'm saying. It's been a progression from way back that is just carried on and continued, whether it's Republican or Democrat. They're all in the same, you know, lying and cheating boat. And that's my point. But I'm saying the Democrats are no better. That's my point.
And my point is saying that millions and millions of dollars are spent to make sure that you think like that. And if you're here, it doesn't hold up.
Well, MSNBC, lean forward, you know, your kids don't really belong to you.
and see, this is how I view things here. And, you know, how do you tell people that, well, he's still droning people. Well, and he still says he loves Israel all the time. On the other hand, when the rockets started coming in from Gaza, if you know this, that the Iron Dome system is really two Aegis destroyers that sit offshore, and the Israeli system doesn't work at all. I don't know if you knew that.
Interesting. See, I wanted to ask you a little bit about that, Gordon, before we begin to round things up.
I'm a defense technology guy. I know that Obama pulled the ships away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Will you ever hear that anywhere? No. And when they started bombing, the U.S. has an agreement to replenish their bombs, but we decided not to. And if it were Bush, we'd be sending cluster bombs or sarin gas over.
Well, the fact is that monetarily, anyway, the U.S. and Germany have supplied Israel with money for such a long time that they have plenty in their coffers, I believe, at this stage. I mean, if that support wasn't there, where would they be today, you know?
That's oddly enough, and this is bizarre here, but the Democratic Party, most of the Democratic senators, you know, they're very high profile Jewish senators. They're the only ones who ever stand up to Israel. And that to some extent, that's basically the, if anything, one of the great enigmas of American politics, because the typical fanatic Zionist is going to be a senator from Wyoming that if he knew a Jew was walking in the sidewalk, he'd run him over with his pickup truck. And yet this same guy is going to be crying his eyes out in Tel Aviv, you know. And of course, if you know how this game works, and I'm telling you for sure it does, when he gets back to his hotel, he'll have a little boy or little girl waiting for him there.
I don't doubt it. I think it's a very divisive issue just over Israel alone. Of kind of like, are you in support or are you against them? And that's become a dividing line for most people where they are orient themselves politically. I think that we should have our own, all the countries around the world should have their own interests primarily at heart and trying to clean up in their own backyard before they get involved in whether they want to support Israel or not, or if they're pro, you know, Palestine, or if they, you know, this and that.
In the U.S., about 6 years ago, I look on the Anti-Defamation League, Southern Poverty Law Center, and the phony Simon Wiesenthal Conman Center, espionage organizations. I only know that, of course, because I worked in counterintelligence for the U.S. government for some time. And I know them to be hostile to the United States and a danger to the security of the United States.
Yep.
And those organizations, I decided to take them on. Now, I'm a decorated war hero, heaven forbid, you know, and that's the bloody flag. I just took it out of my pants there, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm more likable than they are. And it also, frankly, you know, call me arrogant here, but I write better and I'm smarter. And if I'm not smarter, I find smarter people. And so veterans today, me in particular, I decided to take the ADL on, Abe Foxman, and I decided to crush them. And they decided to crush me. And this is 6 years later. And I can tell you hands down, I won to the extent now that real anti-Semitism or hatred of Jews, since there are no Jewish Semites, I mean, they're all from Poland or Lithuania or wherever, you know, that only 2.5% have Semitic blood, so that 2.5%. But hatred of Jews is becoming popular in the United States, and of the people that I live and work around or whatever, as a writer and professional, I live and work around Jews. Half my family are Jews. Many of my friends, you know, I live in the midst of whatever is Jewish of America is where I live. And so that's who's in the house here much of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they find all this funny because Jews don't like each other any more than everyone else does. They're not the little group people make them out to be. America would be what it is today, good or bad. As with other places, Jews have made a considerable contribution here and continue to do so. Problem I have is like Senator Levin, whose votes and support of veterans and economic issues are wonderful, but his rabid Zionism is horrific to U.S. foreign policy.
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah.
The Jekyll and Hyde situation.
Sure. Yeah. I agree with you there. Yeah.
Do I support him because I need his support for veterans affairs or for minimum wage or his pollution control report? If one of the issues I look at here is, are you familiar with fracking?
Yeah, sure, definitely. I wanted to ask you one different thing here about that ADL and Foxman and all that. Did you ever see the film Defamation? I think it was from 2010 or something like that, maybe newer.
Oh, yes.
I just found it extraordinary about how mind control many of these Jewish children are, the way that they're run up and believe that everyone in the world is basically out to hate them. There was one scene specifically when they're visiting one of the alleged concentration camps and everything else, and they go up to talk with these three elder, I think Polish gentlemen or something like that. And it was clear that they believed that they wanted to kill them. They didn't understand each other's language. They were trying to speak with each other. The young girl, the Jewish girl, said hello to him or something like that, and he replied back like, are you Israeli or are you Jewish or something like that? And it was like this, they're brainwashing their children to believe that everyone out there is a Nazi. They're ready to like slit their throat at any second. I was amazed to see that in that movie.
I spent Passover with one of my good friends. He's divorced. He had his kids with him. And when I'm designing, I always cook the meals, by the way, I'm a chef. And these are nice kids. These are people I'm really close to. And, not religious people particularly, but, you know, it's, you know, like anyone else, you know, I still celebrate Christmas. And it was an issue we sat and discussed about the kids is, do you want to tell your kids these things that people hate them? Because, you know, I have my own beliefs about what's true and not true. And that I would
I believe that telling children that they're despised and that they're victims to make them feel as angry and isolated as possible should be a felony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And destroying the lives of these kids. And these are kids, you know, these are kids I'm close to. These are kids I like. These aren't, you know, just some Jewish children somewhere. These are, you know, their family. And this is wrong. Of course, my own kids, no one in this family has been in it. Actually, I go to churches all the time and take pictures of them, you know, but we haven't had anybody religious in this family since the 19th century. Mm-hmm. My father was a communist. My wife's family, you know, this is another misconception. I currently don't know other than my Islamic friends, and this is an interesting point we might want to discuss to you. My would-be Christian friends, none of them are really Christian. None of them believe, none of them go to church at all. They say 44% of Americans or whatever regularly go to church. Bull. Zero. Nobody I know ever been seen in a church. Entire life. Don't go. None of us go. None of us believe. This is a nation, I assure you, every educated American's an atheist. Nobody believes. It's all bull. Total bull.
Yeah, of course they do, because it's not their true religion. European religion isn't Christianity. This is a Semitic thing. We have our own religions and traditions that we've had for thousands of years in Europe, for example, you know.
And the special operations community, there's, you know, yes, that's a, I know what you're talking about very much, because we're all, you know, would-be Vikings, as it were, you know.
Yeah, paganism and heathenism. We have Slavic mythology. We have Norse mythology, Celtic. You know, it's like we have a rich, really rich, beautiful tradition there from our ancestry. There, a lot of people have neglected for a long time. You know, and I think that's being reawakened, though. That's really good, I think.
A lot of us follow that just on a sociological basis, because it helps us. And heaven forbid, you know, we're the warriors, but these are our religions. This is, and anything that, any religion that tells you can do pretty much what you want to do is, you know, got to be pretty good. Otherwise, I'd have to be, to do that, I'd have to be either Jewish or Catholic.
Well, there's a lot of strict rules and moral codes of conduct within these societies, though. And I think that there's the misconception, the Christian propaganda here is, of course, that paganism and heathenism was all some kind of ravage bestiality where they just, you know, did whatever they want and whatnot. It's a, you look at Viking society, it was actually very ordered. We have something called the Ting, which is actually a precursor to all the democratic systems that there is. And all free men and women were actually part of this system of decision-making within the community. So we have a lot of rules and laws and morals.
See, what I find scary right now, we're closing down Ramadan here. We're almost in the last week of Ramadan. And business-wise, I have...
Whoop, you still there?
Oh, this is a call here from, if I weren't on this, I'd take the call. That's Colonel Hankey calling me, who, by the way, is from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 6'6" tall at 75 years old, and has a home entirely filled with Viking paraphernalia.
Oh, that's cool.
That's his life, and to some extent mine. But I was mentioning Muslims because I work with Muslims, and the religion is far more intrusive into their lives. I mean, I've got people, I'm waiting on contracts for people that won't come to the phone for all of Ramadan.
Yep.
And their corporate management. I mean, and then I have people like, one of my favorite people runs the Opinion Maker. That's the Pakistani news and public affairs website, Raja Mutaba, probably one of the finest people I know, certainly one of the most intelligent. I've stayed with him at his home. He's a delightful person. Raja he's fanatically religious. You know who Imran Khan is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard the name, yeah.
Imran Khan is a good friend and a brilliant guy. And and a bit of a hard party guy, by the way, you know, if you know what I'm saying here.
Right.
And I have a difficulty. The Imran Khan I know is a hard party guy and fanatically religious. And that one I'm having trouble with.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
Yeah. you know, this,
Now, let me ask you this, Gordon, before we are coming to the end of the segments here in a little bit. We need to begin to wrap things up on this note. It's been very interesting talking with you, learning more about, you know, your work, your research, your beliefs, and talking a little bit more about the website and everything else. But just I want you to give us the details again, of course, where people can go to follow your work. And then if there's anything additional that you just like to leave us with before we wrap things up here for this time, Gordon.
Well, let's see. Veterans Today. I'm senior editor. We have a large editorial staff. Veterans Today is the largest independent news site in the United States. We have bureaus in many countries. More than a few of us, as you're probably aware, are former CIA or Defense Intelligence or from other intelligence agencies. Unlike other websites or other whistleblower groups or whatever, none of us are analysts. I used to kill people. That was my job. I'm a former United States Marine. I'm a decorated combat veteran, as are many of us. I'm multicultural more than perhaps many others, but I don't walk in everyone's shoes and I don't know everything. We try to get every story right that we can. We listen as much as we talk, which almost no one else does. Very strong beliefs. Behind us are we have a lot of power behind us because of who we are within the military in the United States. They stand strongly with us to an unusual extent, and that increases every day. And we take that as a responsibility. And if anything, it makes us probably a little less arrogant, a little less flippant than we'd like to be. None of us, we don't ask for money. We don't accept money. We don't pay anybody here. You can read my materials on at Veterans Today or at Press TV or at New Eastern Outlook in Russia. And I am regularly a guest on Press TV or an endless number of American radio networks where sometimes we just socialize and let people know who we are and interact, because sometimes that's more important than other things. It's bringing us together, and that we mitigate the extremist views and irresponsibility I think that the internet has brought us.
All right. Well, Gordon Duff, veteranstoday.com is the website. We'll have the links up that Gordon mentioned as well, so you can click through easily from redicecreations.com. Thank you so much for your time today, Gordon. Really appreciate it.
Well, I've enjoyed it. You've been a great host.
We're going to spread happiness. We're going to spread freedom. Obama's going to change it. Obama's going to lead them. We're going to change it and rearrange it. We're going to change the world.
See?
All right, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you learned a few things about veterans today, and the politics of Gordon Duff. Some surprises there. I always find it revealing and interesting when you can get a bit closer to motives and ideologies, as it says something more about the nature of the general viewpoint. All right, boys and girls, we are going to return with Radio 314 here shortly on Friday. We'll be back with another Red Eyes Radio. We currently have Sonia Barrett, David Icke, Ricardo Duchesne, and many more scheduled as upcoming guests. We also have some new names and some new areas to cover as well after these guests. Some new items, some new topics that we haven't looked at before. And of course, we'll continue as usual to break into new territory and push the limits of what you think you know. We want to know the truth, wherever it may lead. Thank you for listening. Please sign up for a subscription at redicemembers.com to catch all the previous shows, all segments, and all the video material. All right, we'll end for this time. Please take good care, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.